Welcome to the ADAA podcast on Moody and Anxious, What to Do, Treating Comorbid Bipolar and Anxiety Disorders in Children. And today I'm talking with Dr. Mary Freistad, who is a psychologist and a professor of psychiatry and behavioral health and psychology and nutrition at The Ohio State University. Welcome, Dr. Freistad. Let me first ask you to explain what you mean by comorbid when you talk about disorders. I think the word comorbid scares people a little bit.
Sure. Comorbid means that you have more than one diagnosis at the same time. And in children, it's very, very common. In fact, it's unusual when we see a child who only carries one diagnosis.
Okay. Anxiety disorders are common in children. That much we know. How common is bipolar, and how common is it to have pediatric anxiety disorders and bipolar?
Sure. So I like to think of the bipolar spectrum. There's bipolar type 1, which means you've had a full mania, and while technically you would not need to have a full depression, most people do. And then there's bipolar type 2, which is a hypomania plus the full depression. Then there is cyclothymic disorder, which means little highs and little lows, but really rarely stable in between. And then we have what in DSM-4 was called bipolar not otherwise specified, or BPNOS. And in DSM-5, it has the somewhat awkward name of OSBARD, Other Specified Bipolar and Related Disorders, which is not very catchy. But when you put all of the bipolar spectrum together, and we have pretty nice emerging data suggesting that these indeed are a spectrum of related conditions, I think you could think somewhere in the 1 to 2% of children and teenagers who are somewhere on spectrum.
Okay.
Oh, and then the question about the anxiety, which was the second part of that. If you have bipolar disorder, the likelihood that you have another, again, comorbid condition is quite high. We see very few children or teens who have only a bipolar spectrum disorder. And anxiety ranks right up there. Probably two-thirds to three-quarters of our kids with a bipolar spectrum disorder will have one or more of the anxiety disorders.
Oh, okay. So is this something parents should be looking out for? Let me ask you, what signs should signal parents to take their children to a professional if they're worried about that?
Sure. So if you are seeing significant mood vacillations in your child, little triggers result in large responses. Or if you see kids, I mean, really, parents know when they need to get an assessment for bipolar spectrum disorders because things are seriously out of whack.
Okay.
At home, at school, with peers, you're seeing the impairment. And then if indeed you have the anxiety disorder along with the bipolar disorder, what we see is that the bipolar triggers some anxious experiences, the anxious experiences can trigger more of the mood lability, and they play off each other in a not very pleasant kind of way.
Okay. And let me ask you to talk a little bit about how children are assessed, and can you also address age levels? How early can a child be assessed?
We have a specialty center, so we see unusual cases. We have diagnosed preschoolers. That is not common. Bipolar spectrum disorder in a school-age child is not common. By the teenage years, it is less uncommon. However, if you are in a setting where you're seeing more primary, secondary, tertiary care, you will most definitely see this condition. In terms of how to think about an assessment, if indeed your child has a bipolar spectrum disorder, while we have no crystal ball, we don't know precisely what the lifetime course is, we do have reason to suspect that this individual will have waxing and waning of symptoms over time such that the diagnosis most likely does not permanently go away. Doesn't mean you will always be symptomatic, but it means that those symptoms could come back at any given point in time. So this is not a disorder to take lightly. This is not a disorder to make a diagnosis in a 20-minute office visit. This is a diagnosis that deserves a very careful, thorough, thoughtful evaluation. And by that, what I consider the most critical piece of the evaluation is that you generate a very comprehensive lifeline for the child. What of any type of symptom, onset when, offset when, and in the for the child's entire life, and in the context of other events in the child's life. Did the family move? Was there domestic violence? Were there other stressful life events that occurred? Was dad unemployed? Were there financial problems? Was the child taking medication for a medical condition and symptoms appeared to come and go with certain medications? All of that needs to be put together in a very thorough, comprehensive, thoughtful manner so that when you make this diagnosis, you are really certain that what you are seeing is bipolar disorder. And then in terms of the anxiety, some kids, when they are getting manic or very depressed, they might have anxious features that go away when the mood stabilizes. That would not be an independent anxiety disorder diagnosis. However, we frequently see that the anxiety hangs in there even when the mood is stable, and that's when you know you have a separate diagnosis.
Okay.
The other piece that I really see as my second key feature in making an assessment is getting a three-generational genogram, where we find out, number one, any kind of what we call familial transmission, meaning that maybe grandma had the illness, and maybe on mom's side, and maybe the paternal uncle, meaning dad's brother, also had the illness. And then when we see it in the child, inevitably, after we've made an assessment, parents will come back with, but why? It's an understandable, natural question, and when we've done that thorough lifeline and can really explain why we believe this is the accurate diagnosis, and then when we have the three-generational family tree and say, well, here are the risk factors. Here you had mood disorder, maybe you had severe depression on dad's side, and you had bipolar on mom's side, that is just confirmatory. Family history doesn't make a diagnosis, but it helps us understand why a diagnosis is there. We do know that bipolar disorder is one of the most heritable illnesses between mental and physical illnesses of any condition on earth.
But not necessarily. A child could have bipolar, could be diagnosed, and you might not have it in the family history.
Is it possible that it could be without a family history. Okay. Then we start looking for prenatal, perinatal trauma, other kinds of organic risk factors that would produce the illness.
Okay.
We believe if a child has onset of bipolar disorder, the likelihood that there is a physiologic, biologic underpinning is very strong. On the other hand, that does not mean there's no room for psychosocial input, because cause of illness is very different from course of illness. So you can have a biological cause of illness that can be tremendously influenced by psychosocial course, and that's where we have room for good therapy.
Okay, and that leads us to talking about treatment. So a child receives the diagnosis of comorbid anxiety and bipolar, and of course the parents want to know what's next.
Okay, so when we think about treatment, starting with bipolar disorder, if you are a BP type 1, you really start with medication. That's step number one. We don't have clear guidelines on BPNOS, or what's now called OSBARD. Maybe medication is an essential first step. Depends upon the symptoms. We may or may not need that. We are currently testing at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. We have a study undergoing looking at omega-3 fatty acids plus psychotherapy. What we don't know is if that will be enough to moderate the symptoms or if we also need to have some psychotropic medication. My prediction is that, and we haven't unmasked our findings yet, we're still undergoing the study, my guess is that we will be able to get by with lower doses of medication when we put in the other adjunctive interventions. But that remains to be seen. We are still in the midst of that particular study. So in terms of step number one, usually involves stabilizing the mood swings of the bipolarity. But that's step number one, and that takes care of part of it. But you can talk to any psychopharmacology expert in bipolar disorder in kids, and they will say that's only step number one. Nobody believes that medication does everything. The rest of it really then is what we call in our form of therapy, psychoeducational psychotherapy or PEP, that the child and the family need to understand the disorder and they need to learn how to talk about it so that they can manage the symptoms in a very matter-of-fact, low-key, non-accusatory kind of a way. So we teach parents and kids what these symptoms are, what the components of comprehensive care are, and then we teach the kids mood regulation skills. And with the child and the family, we work on improving communication and problem solving in the service of symptom management.
Okay. So they're treated together if you have the comorbid illnesses, or managed as they present themselves?
Sure.
Or?
So I always like to think, what's in the driver's seat? And if you have bipolar disorder and an anxiety disorder, 9 times out of 10, or maybe 95 out of 100, the bipolar will be in the driver's seat. So you need to, first of all, get the mood stable and make sure that the parent and child understand how to manage those symptoms. Then I always, when we've got the mood a little more stable, I always like to do a quick little reassessment. And I like to think of sweeping up the remaining pile symptoms into piles. And what piles do we have left after the mood is stable? And sometimes we have a little anxiety pile, and sometimes we have an ADHD pile, and maybe we have a learning disability pile. And then we need to make plans for each of those piles. We know from, if we've got comorbid anxiety, if at all possible, we want to go with CBT as the intervention. The reason, because we know that both CBT and SSRIs are effective in treating child and adolescent anxiety disorders, we also know that an SSRI has the potential to dysregulate the bipolarity. So you want to be really stable with your bipolar disorder. If at all possible, start with CBT, because we have no evidence that that can induce mania.
And CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yes. Okay. And we have very clear evidence-based protocols for cognitive behavioral therapy to treat anxiety disorders. It's the safest way to go. However, not all families can access good cognitive behavioral therapy. And if they can't access that, which is the evidence, and if they're going with medication, or there are other reasons that they can't or won't follow through with the hard work of CBT, because CBT is not easy, and taking a pill is easier, and it might be more accessible depending on where a person lives, then you just want to be careful that the person doing the medication management is monitoring to make sure that there's no triggering of the mania.
Okay. And I think you've touched on this a little, but if additional disorders are diagnosed, how those are addressed. So you've talked about the piles.
Right. So let's say you also have, you, and this is not at all uncommon, we have a child with bipolar type 1, generalized anxiety disorder, ADHD, and a math disorder. Okay. Not an uncommon combination. So you treat the bipolar, you get it stable, you start tackling the GAD. You might need a little bit of pharmacotherapy for the ADHD, and you also need all of the behavioral planning around ADHD, the contingency management, the parent training, the daily report cards from school. And what can make a teacher or parent's head spin in circles is that the symptoms of ADHD are very much behaviorally regulated, and the antecedent behavior consequence really flows smoothly. The symptoms of bipolarity, the grandiosity, the euphoric mood, you cannot behaviorally make those go away. Those have a very different course. So some symptoms are very behaviorally responsive, other ones aren't, and that's where the clinician really needs to help guide the comprehensive care for the child, because it can make a poor parent or teacher's head spin to know how to respond to this versus that. It gets very confusing when you're right there in the flesh.
Yes, yes. So I guess the questions the parents should ask, what should they ask their mental health professionals, and how should they work with the schools just to keep their heads from spinning totally out of control?
Sure. I think information is the key. And I would start by making sure that the mental health professionals, be they the prescriber, which may be a child and adolescent psychiatrist, may be a primary care, although the primary care doctors tend to get very nervous because this is not in their typical wheelhouse. This is not the typical training that a primary care physician has received. So if at all possible, I would go to a specialist child and adolescent psychiatrist. There may be nurse practitioners prescribing. Again, you want somebody with expertise in this domain. This should not be the first child they've ever treated with bipolar disorder and an anxiety disorder, because it's a little complicated. So if at all possible, get that specialty care. So number one, and then for the therapist, hopefully it's not the very first case of bipolar disorder they've ever treated, although everybody starts with a first. And if it is the first, and sometimes it will be, then you would want to really encourage, again, the more empowered the family is to even bring in treatment materials. We now have evidence-based treatment workbooks that families can access. They can bring to their therapist. There are various models. Ours, for example, is available on a website. Families can pre-order these and bring them to their therapy session and say, this is the evidence-based treatment. We would like to work through this with you as our guide.
Okay, we'll make those available, a link to those on our website as well, so families can find them. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about the research or where this is going or what you'd like to see in the way of treatment or management of symptoms or medications?
Sure. What I would like to convey to families is a sense of hope. We know a reasonable amount today about how to help kids who have bipolar disorder and comorbid anxiety disorder, but we are learning more at a fairly rapid pace. And what I would say to families is become educated, don't give up hope, know that if you continue to pursue proper care, we have a very good reason to believe that your child will improve.
Good. That's good. Giving hope. I think that's always a good first step. So I've been talking with Dr. Mary Freistead from The Ohio State University, and this is Jean Tycho for ADAA.